Alrighty, so here we are once again. And if I were to have a Nazareth quote, what I would say is, here we are again, singing the same old songs, waiting for someone to sing along. So for those of you who don't recognize that, that's from one of my favorite deep cut Nazareth tunes. Of course, the last tune I played was not a Nazareth inspired tune, but something along the same lines, maybe a little older, from a definitely a group that Rolling Stone magazine called at one time British hard rock pioneers, that included folks such as Paul Kossoff, Simon Kirk, Andy Frazier, and Paul Rodgers, and that song is sort of a semi-deep cut. Most folks know that band for their other lovely song, All Right Now, which was a huge multi-jillion selling piece that's been copied and done by countless bands. Many of you know that the guitar player for that band is considered to be one of the 100 greatest guitarists of all times, according to Rolling Stone. That was Paul Kossoff, by the way, who unfortunately had a nasty drug habit from which he prematurely terminated, which is really, really sad. Most of you probably know that Simon Kirk and Paul Rodgers went on, excuse me, to form the band Bad Company. Paul Rodgers is also the lead vocalist for the band he did with Jimmy Page, The Firm, and also briefly doing The Law with Kenny Jones, ex-Faces and Who drummer, replacing Keith Moon. What a interesting character he was. And also singing with the remaining members of Queen as vocalist during a tour for them. So Paul Rodgers definitely has an interesting history, and also done solo work, and just a great vocalist in his own right, certainly. Normally, I would be doing that sort of thing on a Les Paul, but I was doing that on another one of my Les Paul guitars, actually the G&L, which is kind of an interesting, but it has a special pickup configuration through one of my all-time favorite amps that was just recently made for me, another Goodsell by Richard Goodsell here in Atlanta, who is just a really phenomenal amp builder and generally great guy. And I think I've certainly mentioned him before in my podcast. He's just To know Richard is to really like him and to respect him, not only as an amp builder, but as a person. He's just a really cool guy. And my hat's always off to him. Just really excellent. So he's gotten me a new creation that's actually a two-channel amp that's got two different voicings off of it. So it's just really cool. And it's got all that old vibe to it, which I just love that Richard does so well. So, I come to you folks in listener land once again to talk about some things that are going to be pertinent over the holidays as we are just coming out of the All Hallows Eve, All Saints Day, Halloween festival, depending on what your preferences are. And heading into, if you're of the American variety, Thanksgiving holiday soon to be upon us. Some of you may want to go back and revisit some of the podcasts I've done about holidays and holiday-based depressions and what to do with family over the holidays. I'm going to be talking a little bit about that in this podcast, but this is going to be kind of an admixture of stuff because part of what I wanted to talk about too is really sort of being yourself and kind of being yourself or when you're around a bunch of different folks who may have different expectations, particularly family members, because, we've talked about sometimes how as adults we get around family members, particularly parents, and we tend to get infantilized by parents, and speaking from a a child of Mediterranean parentage, you know, it's like, you know, once a kid, always a kid from your parents' viewpoint. And, you know, it gets kind of annoying, and sometimes you end up finding yourself back in what I call that infantile emotional child state and acting around your folks and reacting to them very much as you did as a child or teenager. And, you know, some parents have a really good way of eliciting those sorts of responses and kind of tricking your brain into going back and revisiting old neuronal patterns which you thought were long lost dead. But always remember, listeners out there, that as Cicero, the famous Roman orator, once noted, nothing is stronger than tradition. And if he were a psychology type or a counselor to a therapist type, what he would say is, particularly if he had any neurological training, is he would talk about brain patterns. And once you establish so-called habits by creating a neural pathway and a network in your brain through repeated thinking and feeling and acting patterns, your brain sort of goes to that quote-unquote automatically. And even if you don't use it for a long period of time, sometimes it comes back to haunt you even when you don't. So I tell you listeners out there, if you find yourselves falling back into old childhood patterns with various family members, whether they be siblings or parents or cousins or whatever, don't be too hard on yourself, because old patterns die hard and bad habits die hard. And so sometimes you just have to kind of be mindful of that. And I think that's really the key to a lot of things in life is mindfulness. And I know a lot of you folks have heard a lot of the recent sort of buzzwords in the mental health field is mindfulness training and all that kind of stuff, which of course has been around for eons in the Asian community and the Far Eastern community in terms of meditation and Zen Buddhism and all that sort of things. And we Westerners are Johnny-come-latelys in that field for sure. So, you know, I'm sort of rehashing new old wisdom, so to speak. And I've talked about some of that in previous podcasts as well, but I want to remind folks, no pun intended, to be mindful. Okay, a small pun. To be mindful during these periods, because as nice and wonderful as the holidays can be, they can also be sources of stress and tension, and in some cases sadness. Some of you, which I've also talked about previously, some of you are going to have had experienced loss of various types in and around the holidays. And, you know, if you have, the anniversary of the loss of a loved one, now, whether it's a family pet or a parent or spouse or lover or just really good friend or whatever, can certainly be a not very good situation. And when that's admixtured with the holidays, it kind of pulls up for conflicting emotions and kind of does not compute brain patterns, so to speak. We're actually on the year anniversary of my father's passing, and so it's interesting for me, and certainly my father and I were not close in any way, shape, or form, from my perspective at least. I mean, it's kind of hard to be close to a narcissist, so I'm not belittling anyone or, you know, slamming him or attempting to denigrate his memory, but, you know, it is what it is, and I don't pretend. So certainly his passing and the anniversary of that for me isn't that big of a deal. But I'm sure that folks that had a closer connection with him, you know, are much more impacted by that than I am, in a negative way than I am. Unfortunately, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before, my mom has also suffered a lot of trans ischemic attacks, which used to be referred to as multi-infarcts, which are basically small strokes, mini strokes, as I like to call them, over particular parts of her brain, and she's basically kind of out for the count, so to speak. She's definitely not the same person she was, and she's been like that for a couple of years now. But it's kind of sad, and it's interesting for me because I can't share the holidays and some of the remembrances I had with her the way I used to, And so it's an interesting admixture for me, speaking, you know, as a person, because obviously I was a human before I was a mental health person. So I still suffer from all of the foibles that all of us humans suffer from. And while my training and experience and working with folks and looking at my own stuff for many, many years has certainly put me in a better position to handle it, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not God, and I'm not immune from emotional stuff. I wish I were, but I'm not. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And I guess for me, part of what it's been, and I share this with you, my listeners, because some of you may be dealing with some of this stuff, and I guess I want you to know that, you know, while I talk a lot about professional stuff, and I do it in somewhat cavalier and sometimes even, you know, blunt, and I guess for some folks probably a little too blunt manners at times. I also want you, you know, sometimes I think people hear me and they go, wow, this guy's got his, you know, really got his stuff together and he knows a lot about stuff and surely he doesn't, you know, have issues with emotional stuff or whatever. And I can assure all of you out there in listener land that that is definitely an erroneous assumption, and I just kind of have to laugh at it because it really is. It would be wishful thinking on my part to say that that were true, if not out and out delusional, because, you know, I still suffer from the same emotional stuff that everybody else out there does. I'm just a little bit better equipped to deal with it some of the time, and sometimes I forget that I'm equipped to deal with it. I get immersed in the brain patterns, you know, back to the neural pathways. I get immersed in my old habits, my old neural pathways, my old scripts, as the transactional analysis people used to call it. I get hooked in the old scripts and I keep replaying them in my head. And before I know it, within a matter of milliseconds, I'm there where I was before I learned to deal with it. And, you know, and then I have to kind of catch myself and go, okay, dude, you screwed up again. But I digress. And now what are you going to do and how are you going to recoup? And, you know, and so I have to go through all this beating myself up for being a moron because I know better. You know, folks out there that haven't had the training I've had and the experience I've had have an excuse. I don't have an excuse except that I'm human. And while I really dislike that at times because it makes me susceptible to the same foibles that the rest of humanity is, subject to, it's also kind of a reminder and sometimes helps me to ground my humanity, if you will, and to identify with other folks in pain. But it really is inconvenient as heck a lot of the time. And, you know, I have to say that to you. I mean, I wish I could become more robotoid and more like Mr. Spock on the Star Trek series and be all logical. But, you know, even Spock had this struggle because he was half human, so he had to, you know, deal with the emotional stuff, which occasionally crept up to kind of bite him in the butt, so to speak. And I sort of feel like that. You know, I'm pretty rational and logical person, but boy, I can get as irrational as the next person if I allow myself to. And it's just a constant monitoring and being on top of your game and listening to yourself talk and thinking about why you're telling yourself these messages and why you see the world that way and analyze it. And is there a way to review that better? And I share this with listeners because I have the same struggles that the rest of you have. You know, you folks may have different struggles in different arenas, but the end result is still the same. I have emotional crap to deal with, just like every one of you out there has emotional crap to deal with. It's not the same stuff you deal with. It may be not to the degree that some of you deal with it in certain areas. It may be lesser than some of you. It may be greater than some of you in certain areas. But we all have our stuff to deal with. And I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating. Every person's stuff is bad. Irrespective of what they see other people doing, everybody's stuff is really bad to that person. Their subjective reality and their subjective pain is very real and very painful to them, and at times feels like the worst thing that anybody could go through, and a whole lot worse pain than other people are going through. And at times we irrationally delude ourselves into believing that, and I'm no different, right? That's why I have my reality checkers, and I've probably suggested that to you folks before. But if I haven't, this is a good time for me to do it. And if I have, this is a good time to remind you of it, since we're heading into the holiday season that is fraught with emotional pitfalls and reminders of neuropathways that we would probably rather not be reminded of. So what I tell folks is, I have my anchors. I have my reality checkers. So one of the things I do for a reality checker is I try to look at folks around me, and because there's a lot of people out there who have been dealt much harder things, in my personal view, much harder things than I will ever hope to have to deal with. And I pray to God and Buddha and Allah and any other deity I know that that's the case, that I never have to go through some stuff. But I mean, I see really what I would consider to be terrible things happen to people for no good reason. And, you know, and some of you folks are the recipient of some of that. And it really, I feel very sad about it. And I feel at the same time very outraged about it sometimes. And, you know, I catch myself on this trip in my head about, well, it's not fair and this shouldn't be happening. And, well, and then I have to remind myself there really is no concept in reality time of fairness, right? And I've said that before in previous podcasts, but this also bears repeating. Never forget, dear listeners, there really is no such thing as fairness. That is a social concept that, in my personal opinion, should never have been foisted upon us and promulgated as truth, because it's not truth, it's delusion. Because if there were fairness, you folks listening to this podcast, and thank you for doing so, would not be having to listen to this to help solve problems, because you wouldn't have problems, or the problems that come up, you'd be able to solve on your own. You wouldn't need me or anybody like me to help you with them. Right? Let's just be honest. If there were fairness in the world, there wouldn't be prejudice in the world. If there were fairness in the world, there wouldn't be wars. There wouldn't be rapes. There wouldn't be murders. There wouldn't be folks abducting people and selling them into human slavery, or there wouldn't be starvation. There wouldn't be disease and famine. There wouldn't be hatred. But there are all those things. There are diseases that people catch. Sometimes they're born with, they come out of the chute with birth defects or whatever, right? If there were fairness in the world, none of that would be happening. So all you have to do is use a little bit of those prefrontal lobes that the Creator has endowed you with, and to know there, in the vernacular of the South, there ain't no such thing. There is no such entity as fairness. There's no such entity as justice. That's another social euphemism that never existed. Because if there were fairness in the world, there'd be justice. But because there's no fairness, there's no justice, right? To quote a line from one of my favorite powerhouse Prague trios, why does it happen? Because it happens. Roll the bones, right? So trying to make sense out of it will drive somebody crazier than they already are, you know? This why me stuff doesn't get you anywhere except frustrated and sad. And then you either have to come to the conclusion that there, A, is no God, which I'm certain that many people have probably come to. And if you have, that's great. I personally don't subscribe to that. But, you know, if the listener feels that that's his or her best option, then more power to you. But just saying, you know, so A, there's either no God, or B, God doesn't give a flip, right? Or C, God's not doing his or her or its or whatever, however you conceive of that entity or entity's job. And so they better get off their butts and start getting busy, right? And none of those are very appealing thoughts, at least from my perspective, right? And I try not to ascribe those kind of things to any superior entity, being, force, whatever, because I'd like to believe in my own worldview and my own epistemology of the universe, that whatever creature or creatures or entities out there that are running the show, or at least set the show up, you know, it's going to happen. And it's going to happen because it happens. And if I try to figure it out, I don't really think my brain's smart enough to figure that stuff out. And I know doggone well I'm not as smart as this thing we call God or Creator or whatever. I'm just not. Never going to be. Okay? So me trying to second guess this thing, you know, is like an amoeba trying to think the way I do. Ain't gonna happen. Not possible. Thanks. Gave it the office. So I get out of the whole why me routine, even though I certainly fall into those old neurological patterns, because let's face it, society conditions us to think that way, right? You see people on TV or you read poetry or you hear music and you hear things like, oh, it's not fair, why me? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there is no such thing as fairness. There is no such thing as justice. There just isn't, right? Stuff happens and we have to deal with it. And it's not always to our liking. In fact, it's oftentimes not to our liking. You know, and I remind folks that one of the key edicts of Zen philosophy is that, you know, the cause of, and I'm going to paraphrase it, Zen philosophy says it's so much better than I could ever do it, but basically that the cause of most misery in the world is people wanting the world and things in the world to be other than they really are. And I'm not suggesting we shouldn't want a better life and we shouldn't want a life with less pain or less misery, however you define that, or less bad things, however you define that. But the reality is, most of the time, stuff happens and we have to deal with it. And it's better to figure out coping tools to deal with life than it is to ask yourself, why me? Right? Because I can think of 100 people off the top of my head, and most people I don't know, stuff I see occasionally when I watch the news on TV, which is almost never because I get angry at the way that people, in my personal opinion, are stupidly handling things, and I don't want to piss myself off more than I already am about the idiocy of other people. So I use escape avoidant tools and just don't listen to the news, don't watch the news on TV, don't read about it in the paper, because I don't want to piss myself off and depress myself off more than I can possibly help it. But occasionally I see stories of people falsely imprisoned for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. You know, you see people who are struck down with crazy accidents where they get hit by a hit-and-run driver or they get hit by a drunk driver and they're paralyzed from the waist down or the neck down. Or, I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that happens to people in the world. You know, people get abducted and they never get found. Their children are abducted and parents never find what happened to them, or they find their body in the ditch 3 years later or whatever. I mean, just really, really, really horrific things in my personal worldview of things that happen. So whenever I start feeling really sorry for myself and really, you know, wanting to whine and bitch and moan, I just look around me and I think about all those people who have it 300,000 times worse than I could ever think about having it. Because thank, you know, God, Allah, Buddha, whatever, I'm healthy, relatively healthy, you know, and part of that I thank myself because I eat really well. I don't eat, as most of you have heard, my raving and rantings on prior podcast. I don't eat refined sugars. I don't do hydrogenated fats. I make most of my own stuff. I don't buy crap in boxes for the most part, unless it's frozen vegetables or whatever. I read labels like a banshee if I buy anything in a box or a can at the grocery store. I tend to shop in the so-called quote-unquote organic healthy sections, and I still read the label because, as I've said to you folks before, the only thing organic means is it's made of carbon compounds, and least we forget, poison ivy is a carbon compound. Arsenic is a carbon compound. Right? And the poison that's in rat poison, FYI, you know, fecal material is carbon compound. And I don't want to be putting that in my body either. Thanks a lot. So, you know, I read stuff like crazy. Sugar is a carbon compound, right? And a lot of these so-called organic healthy dillies have boatloads of sugar in it that these people ought to be ashamed to say that they're healthy and organic. I mean, that's a travesty in my opinion, but I digress. So, you know, part of this is I work out regularly and to keep my body in half-ass shape. I eat correctly. I make my own stuff. I watch what I do. I don't smoke. I'm allergic to the chemicals in tobacco, so I don't smoke cigarettes, never have. You know, I've never done illicit drugs, as you folks have already heard, with the exception of alcohol, which for me isn't illicit, but never been drunk. You know, I'm a control freak. Why would I want to be out of control, right? But my nerdness and my control freakness has also helped me to stay as healthy as I have, because a lot of diseases and genetic predispositions, including addictions and cancer, run on both sides of my family. So part of it's me being smart, and I thank myself for that, but part of it's me being lucky, right? Because you can be as smart as you want, and you can be driving home minding your own business, and some guy, drunk driver, hits you in the road and paralyzes you or kills you or puts you in a coma. So despite everything we do to be healthy and happy and whatever, stuff happens. And why does it happen? I don't know. And I could drive myself crazy trying to figure it out, right? And it just isn't worth it. It's just not worth it. right? Because if I try to figure it out, then either God has to not exist or not be doing his or her, or however you see that entity's job, or I'm being punished for something. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to think of any of those things, because if God is love, God is not, I don't see God as Zeus the lightning bolt thrower. So any of these religions people that preach that, you know, hellfire and damnation stuff, you know, if that works for you, more power to you. But I personally think it's full of, you know what, it's ridiculous in my personal opinion. You know, you can't love something that you're afraid of. And I've said that before, and I'll say it again. To think of God as the lightning bolt thrower and the purveyor of happiness and goodness is ridiculous. It is a completely non sequitur concept that I reject totally, right? So, and I see a lot of quote-unquote bad people that I would label as bad people doing bad things that don't seem to get punished. And you think, well, they're going to get theirs in the next world. Well, you know what? If they do, great. And if they don't, so be it. I'm not God. It's not my place to judge folks. Because if I judge other people, which I do way too much anyway, thank you very much, in my mind at least, you know, I'm not focusing on me. So if I'm focusing on other people judging their stuff and criticizing them, condemning them in my head, you know what? I'm escaping and avoiding looking at my stuff and things I should be working for. So that's why I tell people, stop looking at other folks for excuses for your behavior. Stop criticizing other people in a negative sort of critical parent kind of way, because most of us have foobarred on more than 500,000 occasions in our life if we're old enough. And there's plenty of stuff I can bitch slap myself about. So, you know, I'm not pointing, you know, parenting fingers at anybody else. And when I catch myself doing it, I cut myself off from doing it, because I got enough of my own crap to deal with. I don't need to be looking at somebody else, because if I'm worrying about or spending time criticizing somebody else, that means that's time away. I'm not looking at my own stuff and making myself better. And that's not a good thing in my mind. All right? So look to yourself, improve yourself, thank yourself, be good to yourself, but honor yourself and your body. Right? And anytime you start feeling whiny or sad or depressed, there, I'm sure, no matter what you've got, for the most part, I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that there are folks that are worse off than you. You want to get perspective? Look at people that are worse off than you. You'll feel better. I mean, seriously, I don't say that to be funny. I mean that serious as a heart attack. You know, we don't spend enough time, and I've said this before, we don't spend enough time being thankful. And I am clearly guilty of that. So I say that for my own, you know, benefit as well. The other thing I do when I'm starting to feel bad is I start to look at all the stuff that I have, because what most people do, and again, I've said this before, what most people do is they focus on the negative stuff, which makes them more depressed and more angry and more bitter and more fill in the blank. I don't want to do that. I don't need help doing that. I can do that quite well on my own. I need help not doing that. So I try to look at the stuff that I have and be thankful for what I have, even the little stuff, like I'm not sick. I mean, I take health for granted. Most of you know I was very, very sick as a kid. From ages 2 to ages 10 or 11, I was in the hospital every year from 1 to 3 months with chronic physical problems, because of the fact that I didn't get breastfed and got no immunological antigens from my mother, so I was constantly sick. And I mean constantly sick. And from ages 10 to 20, 21, I lived on antibiotics. I was out of the hospital, but lived on antibiotics 8 to 10 months out of the year, because I'd catch illnesses every frickin' 3 weeks. And I'm allergic to penicillin and sulfa drugs, so I was on mycins, which thinned my blood out, which eventually foobarred my metabolism. So when I started getting into my tween years, my metabolism went, see ya, and I put a boatload of weight on and couldn't get it off no matter what the hell I did, until I started doing vitamins and protein shakes so I would feel better and so I wouldn't be sick after I got written off by the medical profession. And I said, well, you know what, I may have to be fat, but I don't have to be sick. And as an adjunct of me putting myself on these natural supplements to feel better and have more energy and not be sick, they reactivated my metabolism and I started dropping weight. Now, this is a story I've probably told many times, but I think it bears repeating here, because I forget how not sick I am now and how much I would have given just about anything back in the day not to be sick. And that's not something to take for granted, but I do, and shame on me for doing it. So I'm sharing my pathology with you listeners out there so that you don't make the same dumb mistakes that I do. So when you feel yourself getting caught in with all this stuff, you're feeling yourself thinking about friends and family that you cared about and that are lost, remember the good things about them. Don't be sad that you don't have them anymore. Be thankful and happy that you did at one time. And remember the beauty and the happiness and the wonderful moments you had with them. Cherish those moments. And as you have people in your life now that are special to you, don't take them for granted either. Really, really, really appreciate them in your heart. Appreciate them in your mind. Have them first and foremost in your awareness so that the days go, you can enjoy them and tell them how you feel about them. Don't be shy about your emotions. I mean, even when I went to my father's funeral a year ago and I saw my mom, who didn't know me, didn't know where she was, whatever, didn't know what she was doing. I mean, it was really sad. And I probably said, and I said to myself, this is probably the last time I'm going to see my mom alive. And I really don't want to be around her, seeing her the way she is, because I want to remember her, the vibrant, brilliant person who had 10 IQ points on me, which is a little frightening. I don't want to remember her as this, you know, semi-veggie person in a chair, doesn't know where she, in a wheelchair being wheeled around by caretakers, doesn't know where she is. But thankfully, she looked fabulous at my dad's funeral. The caretakers had done a wonderful job with her, and she looked really awesome. And I went up and hugged her and told her I loved her. And it was just an uber special moment for me. And I think about that from time to time, even now as I'm talking to you folks about it. You know, it's very emotional for me because my mom and I are very close. And part of what I've done over the years, as I've seen her degenerate and have the strokes and start to go downhill, is I started, you know, trying to distance myself so that when she passes, when, as I joke about it, when Elvis leaves the building, or as Jung might say, when the ghost in the machine vacates the machine, I won't be as devastated as I would have been had I really stayed attached to that. And honestly, the body that is now, that's my mother, that used to be what I call my mother, really isn't my mother anymore as far as I'm concerned. It's some, you know, alien, whatever. And that's what's allowed me to distance myself a bit from her emotionally so that I'm not going to be like totally devastated when she passes. And I'm remembering the specialness of my seeing her in the wheelchair and her beauty and how great she looked and how much she looked like her old self and me being able to hug her and kiss her and tell her I love her. I mean, that was a really cool moment for me. And I had one of my best buddies with me who drove me there and stayed with me. And I mean, it was just really awesome. And I really treasure the fact that I had a best buddy to drive me there and to stay with me and to be there if I needed him. I mean, that was just really, really special. And those are not the kind of things that I should be taking for granted, and I don't. And again, I share these with you folks, my listeners out there, to say don't let these special moments pass you by. You know, it was a 3-minute interlude between me and my mom before I got in the car to leave. And it was really, really special, and it's imprinted in my mind, what folks in my profession call a flashbulb moment. And it really was. It was a flashbulb memory. I will always remember that as long as I'm alive, as a special, cool dilly. It was uber cool. And it, you know, when I think about it, I remember other special moments I had with my mom in the past that I didn't remember were all that special at the time. But as I think back about them, they were really, really special. You know, and I sort of wish I had, you know, I mean, I told her I had fun with her and I enjoyed it, but I don't know that I wouldn't have done a little more gushy stuff had I had I really been living in the present zen of the moment, so to speak. And I share that with you folks because when I bring up the neural pathways, I bring up the good times and I bring up how wonderful the memory is and I bring up the memory of holidays past with my mom and how special they were. And that's what I hold on to, you know. And that is really great. I don't hold on to the fact that she's really not here anymore in the existential sense. Even though she's physically here, she's not really here in my mind. And I don't grieve about that because I'm holding on to the good stuff, right? And when she finally vacates and, you know, goes to where she's going to go, I'm hoping that I'm going to be happy for her. And I'm psyching myself up to be happy for her so that I won't be sad for myself. Because for my mind, you know, every funeral I've ever been at, and it's not like I've been to a ton of them, but I've been to several. And every funeral I've been at where people have been really, really sad, including me sometimes, you know, we're sad for ourselves. And that really is kind of a selfish thing to be, because really, you know, if we really do believe in an afterlife, as I do, and whether you're Muslim or Jewish or Christian or what pagan or whatever, and you believe in some kind of afterlife, you really need to be happy for these folks. You don't need to be sad. Stop focusing on yourself and start celebrating them being freed from the perils of this earth and the toils and the troubles. It really is a celebration. I know that's sometimes hard for us to remember. It's hard for me to remember. But I try to keep in mind the focus, the good stuff, and the fact that I had good times with them and how special they were in my life. And I hope that when I'm no longer here, that folks will think of me in the same way. At least those folks who like me will think of me in the same way. And hopefully the folks who don't like me just won't think of me at all, as they probably don't now. But that's okay. So I want to talk about creating better pathways. Create happy pathways. Create good remembrances. And during the holidays, create a remembrance of who you are right now, who you are as an adult. So if you get around people that are difficult, if you're around people that you don't like, and for some reason you feel some obligation that you have to be around them, and you put yourself in that situation, always remember that if you're an adult, you really don't have to be around them. And if you are around some really obnoxious relatives, whether they're your parents or whatever, make a choice not to be around them, right? Take care of number one, because if you don't take care of you, there's not going to be any of you to help take care of anybody else. And if you've got schmucks for relatives, you owe them zero. And I say that sincerely. You know, don't go, oh, they're my kin. And no. If they haven't treated you in the way that you would expect somebody, that society would expect somebody to treat another person, and you don't want to be around them, you know, my suggestion to you is take a vacation somewhere, or stay by yourself and have fun at home, or go with friends and create a new family of friends for yourself. Don't feel obligated to be around family if they're really obnoxious. Yeah. And if you're the obnoxious family member, then maybe you can make this as an opportunity to create a new neural pathway for yourself and a new flashbulb memory from the people around you by changing your ways and being nice for a change, and taking other people's feelings into consideration for a change, and trying to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, and thinking about how you would like them to treat you if you were them. That's all we have, is the here and now. Don't live in the past. You know, as Rollo May and Jim Pugenthal, some of my favorite existential psychotherapists, would say, the problem with the past is that's where most of us live. But I would say is, if we live in the past in terms of fond memories, only to remember people fondly, that's awesome. But don't live in the past. Remember them in the past, but remember fondly. Create pathways in the here and now that are going to make you remember fond things and think of yourself and others fondly, and to be appreciative and live in the present as much as possible. And use the holidays to celebrate living in the present, creating new memories here and now for yourself. And don't fall back into old neural pathways that probably don't exist anymore, or they're not relevant anymore for you. Or as one of my favorite Crosby, Stills, and Nash songs would say, as that Stephen Stills wrote, don't let the past remind us of what we are not now. That's a very, very, very powerful thing. And this is part of what I love about music, because it is the thing that is the reflection of the human experience, and songwriters and lyricists much more gifted and wise than I have really stated it incredibly well. And that's why I love music so much, and why it's become part of my spiritual existential being, and why I really value it. And I'm really thankful for it. I'm really thankful that my parents listened to me and got me a musical instrument early, and I started early, and I stuck with it, and, you know, whatever. Find a passion. You've heard me say that before. Find a passion and use that as your fallback when other things seem to be around you. Focus on inner self. Connect with yourself. Know yourself and really connect with that. And you'll be much happier. And be always true to to yourself. As the speech, Polonius' speech to his son Laertes in Hamlet says, above all these things, to thine own self be true. But you got to know yourself first. and then be true to yourself. And then let that true self shine on everybody around you and help them to create more positive neural pathways about you in the present that they can bring up in the future. I'll do another one before the holidays get too far into it. Thank you, listeners, for your patience. I'm sorry I don't do these as often as I should, but, you know, it's like the John Lennon quote, life happens while you're busy making other plans. So thank you for continuing to listen and support me, and I hope all of you have an awesome holiday until we meet again. Thank you. Be well always.